tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 10th of August 2026 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I went to the White Lives Matter protest at Tamworth on Saturday. It was an excellent protest. Probably a couple of hundred people there, I would say, nationalists. And then on top of that, you had people that were shopping, generally walking around the market town. A lot of them stopped to listen to what we had to say. We had a really good PA system. We had four speakers up there on stands and microphone amplifier. Very professionally done. There were Remigration Now members from them that were there, White Vanguard, British Movement, Patriotic Alternative, of course, and another group with Midlands something on it, might be Midlands Infidels, something like that, not quite sure. Another group there as well. There are probably others that I didn't recognise. There was somebody there from Scotland. I was there with my Wales flag, the Welsh flag. The Welsh flag is quite unique in actual fact, because it does actually represent the Welsh people. It doesn't represent the country of Wales. It's the Welsh people. And that's because the dragon itself was seen in a vision by Merlin, or Merlin was asked to explain a vision where a red dragon was seen chasing a white dragon and the white dragon chased the red dragon. And he said, well, the red dragon is the Welsh people and the white dragon is the Saxon people. So the Wales flag is actually representative of the Welsh ethnicity, not the country, which I think is probably, I mean, you could say that other countries' flags represent the people, but not in such an explicit fashion as the Welsh flag does. So it was good to see the Welsh flag there with the Scottish saltire as well, and the flag of St. George. I don't think I saw any Northern Ireland flags there. We had some very good speeches. I think it probably went on for a couple of hours, something like that. Then there were interviews afterwards, and we all went to one of the local pubs and spent the afternoon in the pub after that. A good social gathering, effectively. And there were no opposition there, no opposing protest, which is good as well, because it means that you can actually get to say what it is that you want to say, and the people that are there get a chance to listen to it. And of course, they can take it on board, or they can ignore it. But it's just nice to not have another group there just shouting and making a load of noise, just making idiots of themselves, basically. No trouble, as far as I could see. I don't think there were any arrests or anything like that. The people were holding up placards for Henry Novak. And, of course, it was in aid of Henry Novak. And it was Indigenous People's Day yesterday, and Patriotic Alternative, you always have a White Lives Matter Day on Indigenous People's Day. In years gone by, there's been lots of individual activism, but this was the first year that there was actually an organised protest for it. And I think it went off exceptionally well, completely flawless, to be honest. And Mark and Laura and Sam did a podcast about it yesterday. They did a stream about it yesterday, and we'll have that on Radio Albion straight after this on the radio stream. We do put 6 hours of content on the radio stream every day. There's only 3 or 4 hours of it is Radio Albion content. And there's another hour or two, which is either Dr. Patrick Slattery, Jared Taylor. Sometimes we put Tim Kelly on there. Sometimes we put Dr. E. Michael Jones on there. And I've just started doing another radio schedule for the website. Long-time listeners will know that we used to put out a radio schedule every day, and it used to have the times that our podcast would be available on the stream. And also, if it was content that we were taking from other sites, we would make their podcast available, the MP3 available. And at Christmas time, I just did a sort of vague radio schedule page saying what time things were likely to be on what day, but it didn't actually have the specific MP3s on there for the bootleg podcasts, I guess you could call them, that we put on the radio stream. So I've started doing that again, and that basically, it means that people who are signed up to the RSS feed, the Radio Albion RSS feed, will also now get these other podcasts delivered to their devices, hopefully. So you should get 6 hours of content delivered to your devices if you sign up to the RSS feed. And of course, say two-thirds or three-quarters of that is Radio Albion content. Unfortunately, Sam Melia is still working. He's got a long-time job, which means that he's unable to continue doing the Thought Criminals podcast for me currently. I say unfortunately he has a job. It's good news that he has a job, but it's not such good news for the Thought Criminals podcast. I might try and do a solo one, because there is so much that's actually happening at the moment with the justice system and with the prisons, and I really would like to talk about it. So I might try and fit a solo one in either this week or next week. And we will go back to patriotic history once I have finished doing the research on Edward Longshanks, which will be the next historical personage that we will cover. Okay, let's get into the news today. And this is really a continue on from Friday's episode about Jason R. Day, the DEI professor, the Ghanaian heritage professor that was given this top position as a professor when apparently he only had two GCSEs. And that was it. And yet they gave him this role as a professor because they wanted a black professor. They were so desperate to have a black professor that they gave this young man the credentials for it without him actually deserving it by merit. And of course, his thesis looks like it was plagiarized. He's now resigned, but it's still in the news. I mean, there was a news article today saying that his students are now suing suing Cambridge University for giving them this person that wasn't actually qualified to be their professor. And of course, they're all paying out around £10,000 a term, something like that, in order to be taught by this person. So today we have a news article from The Telegraph, and the headline is "Professors Who Hired R. Day Attacked Whiteness in Education." Academic who called for re-education of whites among those on panel that selected Cambridge's youngest black professor. So the panel that actually picked him was stuffed full of anti-white diversity hires in the first place. And as I said on Friday, I don't think it's really, I think really what's happened here is they must have had suspicions that he wasn't qualified to do the job, but they were just so desperate to get somebody black in there and make him into a young professor that they just put him in there anyway. And if you've got people that are on the hiring team that attack whiteness, that think that we should have diversity quotas, then again, that's the reason why this happened. Two academics who appointed Jason R. Day to his Cambridge professorship published work attacking whiteness in education, the Telegraph can reveal. Mikolaos Zembilas, professor of educational theory at the Open University of Cyprus, and Professor Anoop Kayak, or Nyack rather, of Newcastle University, were among four external academics chosen to sit on the nine-member panel that unanimously selected Mr. R. Day in 2022. So that's 50% of the external academics were blatantly anti-white. Academic articles reviewed by The Telegraph show that one professor called for the re-education of whites, while another condemned neoliberal whiteness in UK and US universities. And of course, UK and universities are some of the most anti-white places anywhere in the world today, I would say. This is where a lot of this mentality comes from, is it's indoctrinated into the youth at the universities to be anti-white. And yet these professors claim that our universities are filled with neoliberal whiteness. I mean, this just shows you that there is literally nothing that we can do that will satisfy these people, apart from possibly putting every white person in stocks and flogging them. And I doubt whether that would even be enough for them. The revelations over their involvement are likely to intensify scrutiny of the process that propelled Mr. Arday, then 37, into one of the University of Cambridge's most senior academic posts. He resigned from his position as Professor of Sociology of Education on Wednesday amid a mounting controversy, citing an unrelenting level of public scrutiny. And to be honest, if there had been this scrutiny in the first place, then he wouldn't have been given this job and he wouldn't be subject to all of this public scrutiny. And the people that are at fault here are the people that hired him more than he himself. I think he was just giving them what they wanted. The scandal broke after the Telegraph revealed that more than 180 passages in Mr. Arday's PhD thesis were identical or near identical to another student's work. In a 2023 paper, Professor Zembilas and his co-author, Professor Cheryl Matthias, a race consultant and academic coach, a race consultant. Is that somebody that you would go to ask about race differences? Well, of course it isn't. It's someone who will tell you that whiteness is something that needs to be abolished, and that whiteness has been keeping non-white races and down and oppressing them all these years, and that white people need to replace themselves with black people. That's effectively what a race consultant says. Well, the pair of them argued that whiteness, which they distinguished from white people and described as an oppressive ideology, persisted perniciously in teacher education and should be held accountable and culpable. So they're saying whiteness itself should be held accountable, and it's pernicious. How would people react if we were to start talking about blackness and saying that blackness it should be held accountable and culpable and that it is pernicious? And we would be accused of being racist. But of course, you can say these things about white people because other races aren't actually able to be racist. Only white people can be racist, as we regularly get told, which effectively means that the word racist is anti-white because it's only white people that can supposedly be racist. But if we were to say, oh, we need to abolish blackness, the people would say, well, you're advocating for genocide. But when you talk about abolishing whiteness, that's considered A-OK. The critical race theorists argued that teacher education must stop emotionally deflecting anti-racist critiques by merely appearing to say the right things about anti-racism, because this only ignores and diverts attention away from the hegemonic presence of whiteness. And why do we have this hegemonic presence of whiteness in the West? Well, it's because the West was created by white people. Europe was created by white people. America was created by white people. This is why there is this hegemonic presence of whiteness, because white people are the majority. And if we hadn't opened up our borders and allowed our countries to become multicultural and imported these people, there would be no complaints about whiteness, would there? There'd be no complaints about the rest of the world being oppressed by us. And what do they actually say here? They're saying, well, the teachers must stop just agreeing with all this anti-racist critique, because this is or only appearing to agree with it. So what they're saying is it's not good enough that the universities are implementing all this diversity quotas and this DEI agenda. That's not good enough. They're just appearing to support anti-racism critiques, but they're not actually doing anything about them. Well, the fact that we have this Jason Arday that's been made into a professor, that sort of shows that they're not just paying lip service to this anti-racist narrative. They're not just agreeing with it, but they're actually putting it into action. And that's what anti-racism is, in action. It effectively means you get people that shouldn't be in a position being put in a position. People that don't actually have the qualifications to be put in a top position get put in a top position simply because they're black. I mean, that is anti-racism. That's anti-racism in a nutshell. In an earlier paper with a UC Berkeley academic, Professor Zambilas argued that white people should become critical of whiteness to create a more equal society, insisting this would not cause white people to hate themselves. Well, that's a bit of a non sequitur, isn't it? To say white people should become critical of whiteness, they should be critical of what it is that actually makes them who they are, is what they're saying. So I don't see how you could be critical of whiteness as a white person without causing you to hate yourself. And of course, people on the left, these lefty professors, they will say, oh, well, I don't hate myself. But instinctively, that's what's going on there, because they're criticizing what it is that makes them different to everybody else. I mean, why would we want to be critical of the mentality and the character that brought civilization to the rest of the world? The technology, writing, libraries, universities, hospitals, transport infrastructure. The list is absolutely endless of all the wonderful things that white people have created through their tenacity. And yet we have people here saying that, that's all wrong. We should be critical of that. The authors wrote, contrary to the impression that this move promotes self-loathing, a politics of anti-whiteness is precisely the re-education of whites for a world shared with the other. Well, why should we have a world shared with the other? Can't they create their own world? Can't they do their own things? Can't they develop their own technology? It's only because white people are so generous that we have shared all those things with, as they say here, the other, that we have this problem. It's only because we have invited these people into our countries that we get given all this white guilt, because that's what this is. They say it doesn't promote self-loathing, but it does. It promotes white guilt, and it teaches young people to hate themselves and to hate their ancestors and to think that all they are responsible is for the negative things in the world. And they look around and they see starving black people in Africa, and they think, oh, that's caused by white people. And they feel guilty about it, along with all the other discrepancies that we find, all these differences that there are between the races, the differences in life outcomes. The reasons for those differences is because they are different people, and they have different strengths, and they have different weaknesses to us. This modern ideology that everybody is exactly the same, everybody is equal, and therefore, if they're are any inequalities there, it must be because white people put them there. It's not because white people put them there, it's because nature put them there. The second external elector, Professor Nyack, published a paper last year outlining how to remove colonialism from the field of geography, in which he suggested that charging international students higher tuition fees could be racist. Again, what is geography? Well, geography is based on countries, isn't it? And everything that there is to know about different countries in the world, geo. And if it wasn't for white people mapping the world, you wouldn't even have the field of geography. So how are you going to remove white people from it? I mean, that's what they mean. When they say remove colonialism, they mean remove everything that white people did from a subject. If you take white people out from geography, you no longer have a subject. No other people in the world have developed maps. And this charging international students higher tuition fees, well, these are foreign people, aren't they? They don't have a right to be taught at the universities in Britain. They should be charged. British students should not be charged. And it shouldn't be everyone can go to university either. It should just be the people that get A's, straight A students should have their tuition fees paid for, and they should go to university, because they will be the ones that most benefit from this, from going to university. If you spread the resources around everybody and people that are of just average intelligence, that's a waste of resources. But as far as foreign students are concerned, well, they should be charged tuition fees, because they can always be taught within their own country, can't they? Their own country can develop their universities. Why should they be able to make use of our universities that we developed for our people? He wrote, the neoliberal whiteness of Anglo-American universities is exemplified in the practice of charging international students often over double the degree fees of domicile students and doing little to mitigate punitive visa restrictions. Why should we have them there at all in our universities? Professor Nayak added that in other sectors, the practice could appear a discriminatory act tantamount to institutional racism. Well, not really. I mean, if someone from another country was to come to our country and go into a shop and try and purchase something, and the shopkeeper was to say, well, I'm going to charge you double that, then that would be a discriminatory act. But to be charging people from other countries extra to attend our universities, that's not a discriminatory act. That is saying that we subsidise our own people. If we don't subsidise our own people, who else is going to do it for us? And this is the problem with all of this. I mean, it's fine to say, oh, yes, well, you should care about other people. You should care about other people, but not to the extent that it means you stop caring about your own. If a head of a household, a father, for instance, was to do everything for the house next door and say, oh, no, don't give me the job, give it to the father of the household next door, it means that his own household are going to starve for the benefit of the household next door. And again, that's this anti-racist ideology saying, oh, you should be an ally and you should always have it on your mind that you're trying to decrease these inequalities, and therefore you should be aware that you have a subconscious bias, and to counter for that, then you should give more things to black people, effectively. Well, if you take that to its logical extent, it means that you don't give anything to white people, you give everything over to black people. And as we see, that it's a never-ending list of demands, regardless of what you do. I mean, we can see how anti-white the universities are, and yet they're not anti-white enough for this professor. So the end result of all of that is that white people would end up starving because they would literally do everything for these other groups. What we should be doing is the best for our own people group, not to the extent that it harms other people groups, but we should still be doing the best for our own people group, because if you're not going to do the best for your own people, nobody else is going to, because they're going to be doing the best for their own people. The paper also praised Black Lives Matter and pro-Gaza student encampments for giving momentum to calls to decolonize the curriculum from the ground up, and described a scheme to ring-fence funded PhD places for black and minority ethnic candidates as necessary. Well, there you go, PhD places. That's so that people can call themselves doctor. And what you have here is somebody that was able to call himself professor, and that's exactly what these schemes are suggesting should be done. There should be a ring-fenced amount of places for black and minority ethnic candidates. That's regardless of whether there are any black and minority ethnic candidates that are actually qualified, that actually have the intelligence to get a PhD. And because there will be a much lower number of them that do have that intelligence, that are able to get a PhD, they would have diversity quotas, and they'll put people in those places that don't actually have the skills to be in that position. This is the reason why we have these problems. You look at the black average IQ, 70 in Africa, 85 in Europe. It's 85 because they get better nutrition here. They're around white people who have a higher IQ. They get a better education. But that still means the average. That means that 50% of them will be under 85. 50% of them will be over 85. As you get closer to 100, there'll be less people. So probably the maximum you could probably get is about 120. And they would be the absolute brightest amongst the group, but there would only be a very, very small number of them that actually had an IQ of 120 or above. And you're going to need a higher IQ than that in order to be able to get a PhD or to be a professor. So this is the reason why we don't have so many of them in these academic positions. It's not because white people say, we're not going to give you the job because you're black. It's simply because there just aren't enough of them that are capable of doing those roles. And that's simply because that's the way they were created. That different ethnic groups are different to one another. They don't just look different. There are other measurable characteristics that can be measured and put into statistics so that we can see what the averages are. That's the reason why we don't have so many of them. It's not because of whiteness in our universities. Following the Telegraph's revelation about Mr. Arday's PhD thesis, several claims made by Cambridge's youngest black professor unravelled. Two universities denied Mr. Arday's claims that he was one of their visiting professors. A third denied his claim to be an honorary professor, while a fourth disputed that he had ever studied there. The Telegraph also revealed that Mr. Arday had falsely claimed to have published a book. Mr. Arday denies any academic wrongdoing. He has, however, conceded that he did not single-handedly raise $5.5 million for charity or run 600 miles in 6 days, saying instead that he had completed the distance in 12 days. Cambridge is investigating his appointment. On Friday, the university confirmed that its investigation would continue, despite Mr. Arday's resignation, and would consider the circumstances around both his appointment and his tenure. And of course, this is what we were concerned about on Friday. Grandpa Dan, in particular, was saying, well, now that he's resigned, that they're just going to drop the investigation, aren't they? So we learn here that the university is going to continue its investigation, or at least that's what we're being told at the moment. On Sunday, academics turned their fire on the appointments committee, accusing it of allowing political correctness to supersede academic standards. Professor Sir Partha Dasgupta, a Cambridge economist, told the Telegraph, if, as is now clear, even to outsiders like me, Arday's appointment short-circuited academic standards, it was not because the university procedures are deficient, it is because members of the appointments committee permitted political correctness to override all else. And I will say, I don't think that's the case. I don't think this is the case, that it's just individuals on the appointments committee that did this. I think it's in their guidelines to do this, just the same as it's in the guidelines of the police in the race action plan that led to Henry Novak bleeding to death in handcuffs while his murderer was being mollycoddled by the police because they're told that you have to treat different races differently. And the police have been told that they have to get more black and minority ethnics in the police. And of course, it's much harder to do that because more of them have criminal records. This is why you end up with black police officers with charges related to rape and child abuse, which caused a scandal a while back. And again, it was because the diversity committee knew about this, but they decided to appoint them anyway because they were that desperate to get black police officers. And it's the same with the universities. They're that desperate to get black PhD students that they will give these awards and qualifications to people that apparently this guy only had two GCSEs, basically, and he was made into a professor. This academic continued, they permitted that to happen either because they themselves are second rate or because they represent the university administration and want an easy life. Not quite sure what he's saying there. I'm not sure that it's at their second rate. They are representing the university administration, and it is the university administration that has been told that they need to get more black people into these top positions. Ritwik Sawarkar, a biologist and Cambridge fellow, said it would be a big scandal if standards were found to have been lowered so the university could win brownie points on the EDI scale. How can it be a big scandal? This has been going on for years. Myself and Grandpa Dan did a podcast 5 or 6 years ago where the universities were told that they had to increase the number of black students in the top roles, and if they didn't increase them, they were going to have to answer to a committee and explain why they didn't have so many black people in these top roles. So this has been going on for years. The universities know about this. This is a failure, basically, in policy, not in the individuals involved. He said it was possible that the education faculty had chosen certain academics to interview candidates for the professorship because they had an agenda and they knew these people would help them. But Mr. Sawarkar said that it was impossible to know what was in the minds of those who appointed the committee and suggested that the problem could have started with wording of the job advert, which could have already pre-selected or pre-deselected people. When the professorship was advertised, Cambridge told candidates, the following groups are currently underrepresented in our community: women, those with a black, Asian and minority ethnic background, and those with disabilities. So that's basically signalling to them that if you are one of these so-called underrepresented communities, you're going to be more likely to get the job put in for this role because you'll be likely to get it. The advert also listed a demonstrated ability to support equality, diversity and inclusion in education within the faculty and university as an essential criterion. So that's effectively saying, prove that you're a part of Black Lives Matter, you've gone to Black Lives Matter protests, or you've been involved in replacing white people with black and minority ethnics in some part of your daily life. So, I mean, it's basically saying if you're a white person, you're not going to get this role, because that would be going against promotion of diversity and inclusion in education, wouldn't it? Mr. Sawalkar also suggested that if the academics who interviewed Mr. Arday accepted his claim that he learned to read and write at the age of 18, his academic achievements would have appeared exceptional. If that's a consideration, then I can see why he will shine, he said. How can they believe he didn't learn to read and write until the age of 18, and yet he's capable of being a professor just in a few years? He just suddenly learned all this information. The concerns of these academics were echoed on Saturday by Laura Trott, the Shadow Education Secretary, who accused Cambridge of an obsession with diversity targets, which she said had left the university failing students. Well, who gave them these targets? Who gave them these targets, Miss Trott? Well, it was the government, wasn't it, with their promotion of diversity. All the civil service or everything apart from private business has to be seen to be promoting diversity as part of Tony Blair's Equality Act. So it's no good just saying, oh, well, they have this obsession with diversity targets. The people that gave them that obsession is the government. Miss Trott told The Telegraph, I am concerned that by obsessing with DEI quotas, Cambridge has ended up failing students. We need to put an end to this nonsense. She said that Professor Deborah Prentice, Cambridge's vice chancellor, had serious questions to answer. The response so far has been woefully inadequate. It is right that they are reviewing their appointments process, but that is nowhere near enough, Miss Trott said. Yes, that's because they need to repeal the Equalities Act if they want to really put a stop to this sort of thing happening. She added the university must establish how alleged fabrications of this scale were not identified. Well, I say they were identified, but they were ignored, exactly the same as it was identified that a police officer had been charged with rape and child abuse and he was still given the job because he was black. It's the same thing. It's not that these fabrications were not identified. It's that those fabrications were ignored out of a desperation to have a black professor. Whether concerns were raised and ignored, and who was responsible for those failures. If warning signs were missed or dismissed, those responsible should be held accountable. Professor Zembilas, Professor Nyack, and the University of Cambridge have been contacted for comment. Well, the buck really stops at the government for promoting this stuff, for actually putting it into law, and for telling the universities that they have to have a certain number of black academics, effectively, which, as I say, it's going to be very difficult to find people that have the abilities to become black academics. It's going to be a very, very small portion of the black community that actually have those abilities. And that's just going to make the university look racist, isn't it? If they only have the ones, like, if they can't actually get a black professor, they're going to be accused of being racist because they have to account for why they don't have them as well. That's the crazy thing. I think I will try and look up this episode that I did with Grandpa Dan and see if I can get the details from that, because, I mean, that really laid the groundwork for this, effectively. And we said at the time that this is the sort of thing that is going to end up happening, because they'll have no other way of getting these black academics in unless they put them in there without the qualifications. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.